framing the living work of art. As I understand it, the universe is essentially an unpredictable process, not a salvation narrative heading towards a sudden violent conclusion, nor an unstoppable engine accelerating towards a meaningless materialistic utopia. I cannot identify fully with our rational tradition, given a kick by Socrates and Plato, that truth, beauty and goodness only exist as ideals, eternal, unrealizable forms that should be striven for, nor could I accept a religious tradition kickstarted by Paul's interpretation of the words of Jesus, that the soul-cleansing therapeutic process of love and forgiveness is only possible when motivated by the desire for immortality and future eternal bliss in heaven. Although I have faith, I am not a perfectionist, more of a situationist. I just muddled through. One thing I was sure of, I could not myself evolve without taking my cultural ecosystem with me. I believe that all human cultural values, such as ethical systems, truth systems, and beauty systems, evolve and devolve with the human cultures that express them. There may be eternal transcendental realities that are uncovered and lost again, but the static, idealistic view inhibits human creativity and can lead to the uncritical worship of unknowable absolutes. Our souls may be immortal, and if purified, earn us a place in paradise or escape from the wheel of reincarnation, but I assume that virtue, which is not its own reward, can be life-denying and sterile. To me, Jesus appears to be a Promethean, releasing us from the old religious rule of the eternal cycle. Like mathematics, language is a man-made symbolic system that functions primarily as a control and feedback process. However, it also gives birth to metaphorical meaning, which contributed to the evolution and involution of our unique cultural consciousness, who have already evolved psychologically and socially. The progressive refinement of models of material, psychological, social, and cultural reality into an articulated cosmology can only be achieved by constantly revising what was previously believed to be fixed truths, as well as fixed ethics and fixed concepts of beauty and harmony. As the official cosmologist of Melbourne University Union in the early 1970s, I did the best I could to achieve this by creating the bare bones of a subjective, evolving process cosmology. Immoral rationality and irrational morality. The obvious progressive refinement of love from its animal origins also includes agape, is closely associated with religious institutions. Artistic expression in all its mimetic forms only flourishes and evolves with social support. Since the scientific revolution, the institutions responsible for nurturing carefully tested truth systems and those nurturing love-based ethical systems have been developing in competition with each other. The result has been what I have been calling immoral rationality and irrational morality. I was determined to remain loyal to the best hypotheses of science and the scientific method based on reasoning and evidence, as well as to religious ethics based on love as shown by its fruits. And I did not allow any idiosyncratic aesthetic taste based on gut feelings and learned empathetic discrimination to be overruled by social disapproval. Process metaphysics seemed to me the only way to reconcile them. I was unwilling to validate my symbolically expressed explanations of meaning by referring them to any absolute source of authority, independent from my inherited intuitions and personal interaction with my psychological, social, or cultural environment. I created a subjectively validated cosmology, which included and explained all previous human explanatory schema that I was aware of, including those which claimed, falsely in my opinion, to be non-subjective. I was also driven by my aesthetic sensibility to continue the Neoplatonic magical tradition of expressing cosmological explanations in harmonic diagrammatic form, informed by a synthesis of truth, beauty, and love. The main heuristic diagrams of my subjective process cosmology takes the form of both the Tree of Life and the caduceus. Like the wizard and proto-scientist Newton, I've used numerology to create the inner space model of reality. In this case, astonishingly magical origins of my appearance in the world. Irreducible fun as touchstone. My special mission has been to reconcile immoral rationality and irrational morality through though carefully structured with strict rules arrived at modifiable through experience plays neither irrational nor immoral and as flexible short-term narratives which can be reformed as a result of experience. From the classic Homo Ludens, the play element in culture, the historian and philologist Johann Huizinga, I adopted his choice of the Anglo-Saxon word fun to encapsulate the irreducible essence of the spirit of play. In stressing the importance of play as a higher level of consciousness that can unblock tangled consciousness or double binds, I've been influenced by Gregory Bateson's theory of logical types in his collected essays, The Ecology of Mind. Like logic and love, play progressively evolves or devolves, usually in association with both. I adhere to the principle of falsifiability as the essential differences between unverifiable dogmatic assertions and explanations as working hypotheses or useful fiction. As a fundamentally cultural activist, I am personally attracted to playful, reductio ad absurdum as the most efficient falsifiability technique that makes me many dogmatic enemies. Fun is frequently seen, especially by what Wilhelm Reich described as emotionally armored Puritans, as a threat to the smooth functioning of both ethical and scientific institutions, which is due not only to its potential disruptive characteristics, but its refusal to accept any cultural ends as absolute. However, if carefully balanced with both logic and love, as I've been attempting to do in my mission, fun, or levity, as I frequently call it, can resolve rather than reduce the tensions or cognitive dissonance that arise when actors are single-mindedly pursuing particular rational or moral narratives at the expense of others. My first writing on the topic was in 1968 in a short and rather naive article for the student newspaper at the University of New South Wales, which I titled Soul Power and Fun Powder versus Willpower and Gunpowder. Logic, Love and Levity. Within a few weeks of my arrival in Christchurch as a teasing postmodern prophet speaking outside the cathedral in the centre of the city, I published a statement in a local magazine on my reasons for combining love, logic and levity in my idiosyncratic way. To summarise, love without logic is barren. Love without levity is suffocating. Logic without love is meaningless. Logic without levity is out of control. Levity without love is vindictive. Levity without logic is asinine. Love without levity or logic is juvenile. Levity without love or logic is suicidal. Logic without love or levity is Dr. Frankenstein's monster of artificial intelligence sparked into life by electricity. My daily interactions with the general public were conducted with the same synthesis of logic, love and levity with which I've conducted my classes as a lecturer and which formed the basis of my ALF or Action for Love and Freedom movement. This is a university reform movement at the University of New South Wales which I called the Fun Revolution. In doing this, I made my liminal role as a legitimately appointed university wizard clear to all so that those be no mistaking me for any kind of established rational, moral, or aesthetic authority. At the same time, I just wanted to act out different roles in different narratives derived from different ideologies just for fun and to see what happened. In those heady days, by 1972, I'd already settled on my current role set or role complex as university wizard, shamanic therapist, cosmologist, living work of art, Anglican prophet, and founder of the Imperial British Conservative Party, with my subjective process cosmology as a framework for my working hypotheses. I could quickly assess what I believed to be the psychological, narrative, and ideological intentions that that were being manifested in the behaviour, role performance and symbolic expressions of my interlocutors and respond to them playfully. This provided essential feedback for me in checking the validity of my cosmological hypotheses. By carefully selecting these transitional liminal roles and having had them legitimately validated when possible, I could conduct open-ended process experiments in psychological, social, and cultural phenomena, which I believe were unprecedented. Adopting fun as the ultimate rationale for my role actions freed me from commitment to the narratives of both never-ending material progress or eschatological redemption through a history-ending revolution or divine intervention. This metaphysical position has much more in common with Taoism than monotheism, capitalism, or socialism, and was ideal, providing me the detachment needed as a trained social scientist to experiment and to construct working hypotheses.